I should lose you now.
So anyway, welcome everyone to a special bonus episode of Grizzly Pinks Radio. We have gathered for a short, let's call it a trip down memory lane, reminiscences, a toast to departed friends and all that, because I've gathered together some of the old farts, not all of them. We haven't got everyone here, but
can't we call ourselves the current old farts?
The current old farts. Well, okay. I mean, spoilers are completely off because this is going out after the final book counts, but I don't believe there's any old farts left, really, are there? If we are being brutal about it.
Wally's sort of an honorary old fart. Yeah.
I always felt
new upstart fart.
A freshly minted fart.
I'm a creeping sensation in an elevator.
So. You're a toot of fresh air.
A breath of fresh air. Yeah, wonderful. Because I always felt a bit bad about including Jen in that nomenclature because, you know, it just felt a little bit, you know.
So, Andy,
I'm pretty old.
But you're not a fart. Old. You're definitely not a fart. And you're not that old. Come on.
I'm a queef.
I want to...
Right, this has to have the...
You'll have to cut that.
I'm glad you said that.
No, I don't edit these. By the way, I don't edit these at all.
What's a queef?
No, we are not getting into a conversation.
Come on, just go
to Urban Dictionary.
Don't play the innocent with me, Barney.
I don't know what a queef is.
Well, then,
I mean, I can imagine
you can live in ignorance, in blissful ignorance. Then,
you're never going to get this time. If you look it up, you're never going to get this time back, where you didn't know what it meant.
Okay.
Yeah.
I won't look for it then.
Yeah. Anyway, so look, we're not here to talk about bodily expulsions. We are here to talk about a different kind of old fart. We're here to talk about, well, a group of characters, of course, played by you lot, played by a group of people. And, you know, the reason I wanted to talk about this was I felt that, you know, everyone now has hopefully heard the final episode of Book Counts. And if not, well, tough shit, because they're all dead. Except Wally. Right. No, that's true. Wally.
Not all of us.
Yeah, okay, there's a couple of characters that went kind of exit stage left who we don't really know what happened to them. But, you know, certainly two of the characters that have been there since the very first episode of The Watchers of Walberswick died in the shape of Emery and Milton. And Rita, who... Although Rita came in at the beginning of
Ghost Jack Kill,
I think she'd been around longer than any of your other characters. So in a way, it was just as poignant. Mm. In fact, it was certainly just as poignant. I felt like we owed it to them. Does that sound weird? We owed it to those characters just to give them a bit of a send off in a way. Because although I did love the codas that Scott and Spencer recorded, they were lovely. I feel that there's a lot of kind of stuff that happened over the course of the last 2.5 years to those characters that was pretty interesting. And also, I think none of us were probably imagining when we started playing that game back in the spring or summer of 2020 that we'd still have those characters around like nearly 3 years later. So, three years later. So really, yeah, that's kind of why I wanted to do this. So, welcome everyone. We do have Jen as well, who claims she's feeling like, you know, a bit of an interloper, a bit of a odd shoe, odd sock, I don't know.
Oh, no. I mean, I could certainly speak to getting to be part of the most recent storyline and the last storyline for those characters, and that was really great. But there's so many amazing moments in this series as a whole that, you know, like, and I just kind of swan in for like the last I think like 9 episodes or something like that, just like, hello everybody. And you know,
actually that's a good place to start, I think, because I was thinking about this before we did the recording. I think about it earlier today, because as I understand it, you had listened to some episodes before you joined the group, had you? Or had you not?
So I actually did not know which storylines were the old farts. And so the first episode that I did with everybody, the first session I played, I was coming in totally cold with like no knowledge of everybody. And so, which is fine, because that's really how Wally came in too. So, and then after that, I went back and found, you know, where in the backlog these characters started. And I started, you know, listening to the backlog at that point. So that I could be like, okay, I need to understand some of these in jokes.
So, bit of a loaded question here, but if you had heard them before, would you still have wanted to join?
100%, yes. Oh, even more so, actually. This is my like dream game. I have so much fun in these sessions because they're just, you know, lunacy. Most of the time, just absolute, just insanity, and I really enjoy it. And I feel empowered to make deeply weird choices when the mood strikes me, and I love that. So yeah, absolutely.
That's a good point, and I would say one of the overriding characteristics of this group, or at least the four of you here that we have today, is that none of you really play to win. Let's put it that way. No. None of you are optimizing or trying to take the most effective decision at any point. At least that's how I see it, and I love that.
Yeah, well,
where's the fun?
Well, a lot of people play RPGs that way, so you know.
Yeah. Yes, no, I always feel like I want something interesting to happen, but that doesn't have to be good.
Yeah,
indeed.
I feel like we're playing Call of Cthulhu the way it's always meant to have been played. I suppose, or that we're kind of like eternal system play testers, determined to bend or break the thing. You know, I think we'd sometimes treat you, Andy, a bit like a rag doll that we're just tearing apart.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, pinata, yeah, that's pretty, yeah.
A compliment that I've had a couple of times are, I'm always impressed with the way Andy manages to handle the lunacy of his players.
I mean, you've learned to pick your battles, I think.
Yeah, I have. And, you know, and Barney, I want to talk to you specifically about that, because you, from the very beginning, were the provocateur, the chaos agent, the dynamite in the lit match in the gasoline tank. Would you say that's fair?
maybe. I mean, I think we all have our moments, like Jen says, and I think TJ can be pretty naughty. I'm honoured to be that, if that's good.
I absolutely, it's good. I mean, it makes life very, very hard for me, but then it should be hard. My life should be hard. Because if we go back to the Watchers of Wolverswick, episode one, where you decided that this bone was actually yours, this bone that you were going to investigate belongs to you, and you owned the museum. That was like, what the fuck do I do with this now? Because you didn't give it up. It wasn't like a little, you know, jokey. It was like, yep, that's really how it's going to play out.
But then it was good fun, wasn't it? Because it wasn't clear if Hector Risby Ickwell was just delusional or if he was actually telling the truth about it.
Indeed. And it created all kinds of additional complications.
I think for me, I think that choice and some of the other choices is me just feeling a bit kind of a bit frustrated with that way that scenarios start, where you know it's a friend of a friend who gets in touch with you, and you're all just sitting there waiting for something to happen. And I kind of thought, well, why not? Why not just
blow make it all up?
Yeah, you know. Why can't stories actually just come from a backstory? Which any you know why can't they be connected to the characters already?
Yeah, and that's a really good point. And I think it's exacerbated by the fact we've been playing these really old scenarios that really didn't have very smart ways of getting the characters involved. It was all very you know railroady, I suppose you could call it, or very sort of literal. You get a letter saying come to here because something weird's happening, and you just go. I mean, we're currently playing and this will go out before we release any of these, so I won't let on too much, but we're currently playing an old campaign that is just rife with that. Every single chapter starts with a something terrible has happened, come and investigate and die or lose your minds.
And of course, you know, Hector got his comeuppance. So, you know, our whole thing of not making the best choices. You know, I just innocently kicked that child's shins and rolled really well. And then you rolled really well for Labrador. And
is there really an innocent way of kicking a child?
I would have said harmless, but that's also not true.
By definition, untrue.
It was a warning shin kick, which, and the same with the fishy smuggler, farmer guy, whatever, as well. You know. Sometimes I just think, do we have to go through a whole episode of trying to get information out of this weird-looking chap?
I mean, that is the essence of Call of Cthulhu. But yes, I do take your point. I do take your point that sometimes it can be a bit like, well, it depends what. In a way, you're kind of almost like agreeing that that's the process. The protocol is that yes, we'll spend time talking to these weird characters, trying to get tease information out of them to put together the picture and understand what's going on. But Hector takes a more direct route.
And look at us, we're still going. Neither I nor Hector have managed to derail the activities. So
indeed. But you did meet a sticky end, of course. And that still remains, I think, one of the high points of the entire and many people like listeners and Patreon backers always talk about that moment as being just the sort of the best moment of Grizzly Peaks Radio.
Personally, I think I've struggled to find something as entertaining as that situation. Really. So I mean, I really like Barry. I really like playing Barry after that. Actually, I really enjoyed that. But I don't know. I feel sometimes restless with my characters, but.
I think you're forgetting all the moments.
Rita certainly tries.
Sorry,
yeah. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say it's clear that Rita. I think Rita is trying to reach that same level.
And she's more interesting than Hector for sure. Anyway, but
I'm going to do like deeper dives into each of everyone's characters, but I just want to pick up on that one point. I'm doing this like I'm interviewing you all, which is weird. But anyway,
which is exactly what you're doing.
Sure. That's exactly what I'm doing. But I want to pick up on that one point about you getting restless. So I personally, the reason I don't play much is I don't play long. I've only ever played as a player with a character in one long campaign, I think, in my entire life. And I was getting kind of itchy feet after about 2 or 3 months. Perhaps it's just something in me. I kind of get a bit bored maybe of the character and want to do something else or take on a different role or whatever. And you said that a little bit about your other characters, Barney. Is that something you find sometimes?
I don't know. I think maybe it's just having put loads of points into jump and never needing to use it, and wishing that I had put more points in something else, and then when the opportunity comes to create a new character, I put the points in something else, and then I need to jump, and it kind of, yeah.
Oh, well, now we're getting into the pros and cons of skill-based role-playing games.
It's not because I'm a bellend. That's not the reason I'm a bellend. How about that? Should I say that?
Okay. And that isn't what I was driving at all. But that's interesting that for you, it's about your character's capabilities rather than their personality or the way you role play them that is what you get frustrated with.
I'm probably being a bit simplistic about it, but I think there's something in that because you're thinking about who this character is and what they can do. And you certainly cater to all of our abilities. And of course, we have no interest in catering also to our abilities. So I'm perfectly happy to try whatever it is. I don't know. I think sometimes you just... I don't know. Maybe Hector dying at that point and me taking on Barry, maybe that's where the restlessness kind of came from a little bit, whereas Scott and Spencer, you know, have had long lives in their alter egos.
They have. And on that point, let's shift over to Scott. So Scott, I believe, if I remember correctly, I don't think you even made Emery.
Oh God, no, no, you did. Yeah.
I think I think I went on Doll's House and punched in academic or anthropologist or something, and that's what got shot out. And
that does explain the skill distribution, because he was pretty shit as an academic, but he was absolutely incredible at dodging.
Yes. and I think, you know, as an early evidence of Emery's uniqueness, that amazing sequence of dodges he did to avoid the fishman thugs in the Watchers of Wolves, it was like a greased pig slipping through the farmer's arms. I mean, yeah, Emery was an amazing character. I you know, given that you didn't have any say in the makeup of that character, I think the way you sort of played him and the way he evolved was truly wondrous to behold. I loved Emery greatly, mainly because of his utter recklessness in the face of the mythos.
Yes. Well, I figured as an anthropologist and as a person with a deep interest in these things and someone whose academic career had come to a grinding halt as a result of the first scenario, that it just made sense for him to become obsessed with all this stuff. And the more he became obsessed, the more that he could see that he could play around with different aspects of it. Well, that was just, yeah, it was just inviting him to disaster. And I loved every minute of it.
Yeah. Were you continually surprised that he was still alive every time he came back to the table?
Yeah.
I mean, they were remarkably long-lived. That's one aspect of it I think that was interesting. It's like, you don't expect regular Call of Cthulhu characters to last that long, do you, really?
Mm.
Doesn't seem likely. Was that...
Yeah.
Have you had other long-lived characters in Call of Cthulhu?
Yeah, a few, but they were generally more competent. That was the thing about Emery. Barring that dodge skill, there wasn't really anything he could do, not on the character sheet. And so, yes, I've had characters who've lasted probably as long, but they could handle themselves in a fight, or they were good at hiding or breaking into places or stuff like that, or good at talking their way out of bad situations. Emery couldn't do any of these things.
Which explains, I think, now Magnus to me.
Yes.
It's like, fuck that. Fuck that. I'm making a competent character.
Magnus is the anti-Emery. Yes.
Yes. Fantastic. But both equally reckless in their own ways, I think.
Oh, yes.
So, Yeah, so long-lasting characters. How did Emery kind of evolve for you? Obviously starting off with just being given a random character and finding your way into it. What was your, you know, did you become attached to him? I'm sure you did.
Yeah. The relationship with the character certainly did evolve. Initially, I played him completely as a sort of far-schooled, doddering old academic. And I don't think that aspect ever went away. But as he got more into the mythos and more into the intrigue of what was going on, there were certain sort of weirder, darker aspects that were coming into play that I could bring out as well, that perhaps just stopped him just being a one-note joke. So maybe by the end he was a two-note joke. But I had a lot of fun playing him.
Yeah. I think as soon as cavorting had entered his his lexicon of catchphrases, I think you were off. And Scott, is it true that was it your character who had to be sick when we went up the top of that tower?
Oh God, yeah, that was Emery. Mm. Yeah,
yeah,
projectile vomiting over the edge of the tower onto the people below. Yeah,
that was also a very like key defining characteristic, the booze and the after effects of booze.
Yes. Yeah, I didn't quite envision him that way to begin with, but it just, with the amount of sand he lost in the first scenario and the way things were going, it sort of made sense for him to have unhealthy coping mechanisms.
Indeed. And what was I going to say? Yeah, there was the booze, there was the mythos. Oh, yeah. And in a way, it was a little bit sad because I think in Bookhounds, you know, Watson's Antiquities, Melpomene, the whole setup, everything there was like, that's where Emery should, that's it, that's his place. And it was a little bit bittersweet, you know, that he, you know, you guys got to, like, inhabit that milieu for one story and then you all died. So it was a bit tragic in a way, because that's where you should have been all along, really, running an old bookshop with your cat and a good supply of gin and, you know, not having to do too much work and, you know, being able to sleep during the afternoon, in the afternoons, put your feet up.
That just sounds ideal to me.
Yeah. Yeah, all of us, I think, we're all thinking, yeah, that would be good, wouldn't it? Yeah, mm-hmm. Not having to worry about, you know, the real world. So
I'm sure we'll come back to that, won't we? But I do think that was it was really nice to have the bookshop and the pie shop.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, you know, and you know, that's and largely made, down. Yeah, go on.
Oh, sorry, no, I was just going to say, and made for a really nice change of pace at that stage as well.
Yeah, even though I think that scenario, perhaps of all the ones we played, was the least. Had the least kind of forward motion, let's say. You know, there was a lot of farting around, but it was very nice farting around. And,
I can't speak for everyone else, but I know a lot of the farting around on my part came from the fact that I, as a player, kept losing track of the NPCs and a lot of the stuff we were doing. So it didn't help that we had some long breaks during recording, but it was also a very complicated scenario with lots of NPCs and moving parts and so on. And so we'd take a break for a couple of months or something would happen. We'd come back to it, and I'd forgotten everything. So I'd just dick around until something happened that I could latch hold on.
until something attacked you.
Yes.
Even if it was your cat.
And I think, wasn't the whole scenario, right? The whole scenario, didn't it take place within a few days or something?
Yeah, how long was it until... 5 days it was meant to be.
It took about... We pretty much played that in real time, didn't we?
Yeah, if you added up all the recording sessions, that was about 5 days worth. I mean, literally, it was what, 30, 32, 34 hours? Yeah, if waking hours, yeah, pretty much. Anyway, No, wonderful. So talking about pie shops, what a journey Milton went on, Spencer. Yeah. What a journey.
It's quite a transformation that was. Yeah, yes. When I first arrived with Milton, I wasn't really sure who he was, but it quickly sort of, I realised that he was, he's basically Mole from Wind in the Willows. He was kind of a timid character with a lot of curiosity, but I imagine he'd spent his life in academia because he was particularly good at anything, but he couldn't really cut it anywhere else, you know. And he was just kind of along for the ride at the beginning.
Mm. And it's interesting because I'm glad it worked out the way it did, because in terms of the character's evolution, because really your character and Emery's character could have been really similar. I mean, they essentially were almost the same archetype, obviously different skills. You're both elderly academics. But I think that added something very nice to the dynamic, this interplay and the difference between the two of them. They were somehow like brothers in arms, but also very different to each other.
Carry on. I was just going to say that I didn't have much forethought about who Milton was. I really sort of figured him out as we were playing.
And obviously, fairly early on, a pretty big transformation happened in Milton. Mm-hmm. At least initially, it wasn't physical. Well, it became physical quite quickly, but you know,
between the first and second season.
During the second season, well, the first season.
It was in the break between the two.
Yeah, between the second and third, because it was after Surrey Enigma. That was the second scenario, and I think this is fascinating because I haven't. And Scott, I'd love to get your any stories you have around this, but I've yet. This is the only time I think that I've ever been in a Cthulhu campaign where someone has become slowly corrupted by the mythos over time, and it's fundamentally changed them while still making them sort of having them in the story and playing, you know, a playable character, as it were. What was that like?
Didn't you have any characters do that in The Two-Headed Serpent?
Not really. I mean,
oh wow, okay.
Well, I mean, they all got scaly. But you know, the I think all of them became high risk. But not
all of
them. Wally didn't. I mean, not Wally. What was your character's name?
Bernadette
didn't.
It was Bernadette.
She came in too late. But that's really different, Scott, I think, because that's almost like a pulpy kind of like superpower, the way it's presented. It doesn't necessarily corrupt you. You don't have to become something evil, necessarily. Not that Milton necessarily became evil, but I guess he did, kind of.
Well, it developed certain tastes. And I really loved the opportunity to kind of explore, once I'd figured out the sort of mild-mannered character that Milton was, it was great to then have an opportunity to explore his dark side and just that sort of wrestling. He was constantly just trying to keep things under wraps and maintain this sort of exterior normality while, this internal struggle was going on. These peculiar tastes began to arise within him.
Mm.
I felt certain that you, Spencer, and Andy had been chatting about this, about how to integrate the talisman.
Very brief conversation about what the talisman might do, and the suggestion that I was, you know, going to follow in Butterworth's footsteps, as it were. Mm.
But that was really just at the very beginning when I explained to Spencer what the amulet actually did. That when you look through it, you see reality, and it has this kind of corrupting influence of Igolanak. Igonalak. I never say that right. Which way is it? Igolanak.
Igolanak.
Igolanak. L first, N second. Igolanak. But no, after that, we didn't really plan anything. I think some of the eating stuff we talked about him getting bigger. That was about it.
Yeah. So I think you sort of hinted at it, and I lent into it, I think.
Mm.
You just give him the word blancmange, and he's off.
But then, it, of course, it got a lot darker during Book Hounds.
And that was fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny that Wally's very first moment in the group was the point at which you finally started indulging Jack's tastes. And I was thinking, God, she'll be put off. She won't come back after that. But no.
Well, I did wonder what Jen might have thought of me as a player.
but I think you played it really well, Spencer, mm-hmm. because you could have easily tipped over into excess. Like, I think it would be very tempting just to go all, you know, serial killer-ish at that point, but you didn't. You kept some of your humanity, which was brilliant.
I wanted him to be fighting it all the way, you know. But it just kept creeping out here and there.
Yeah. With a bit of gentle prodding from me as Jack.
Oh, yeah, you certainly.
Dangled the occasional tasty morsel in front of him.
Yeah, the bit where you tumbled out of the carriage at the feet of some, you know, East End streetwalker was an example. Fancy coming down the back alley for a knee trembler? No, we won't do that. Not now.
I didn't. I didn't. Yeah, play into your.
No. Your hands, God knows what would happen if that had been Barney or Scott in that situation. So that was a wonderful transformation. I thought, who knows if we get a chance to do something like that again? But it was. I think it worked beautifully in the end. Talking about Wally, Jen, you came in late but strong. I think this group always needs a moderating influence. Be that Nikki initially. And I don't mean that you were being conservative or safe or boring or anything like that, but you just perhaps, you know, a little bit of light to the shade, or I don't know. You know, what was Wally's like role, do you think?
I think that similarly to Emery, Wally had almost no talents at all. She I made a dilettante, and I was like, well, she's a dilettante, and so I just, you know, I scattered her points hither and yon. So she had like little tiny dribbles of everything except for charm. She had a fair amount of charm, a pretty high charm. So that was it. And so, and then, you know, once I decided that she was just kind of this seeker, I don't know. I think that she's, you know, I don't know what her role specifically was, but she was just so delighted to be included. You know, finally evidence, magic is real. And there is something weird going on underneath the city. I always knew it. And, you know, and these people, we're discovering this together. This is great, you know, because she's not particularly sane, you know.
Yeah. But and then seeing all your new friends die horribly. Actually, I don't think you actually saw them die, did you? You ran before they died. I think
I saw. I believe that I saw,
Rita jumped.
Yeah, I saw Rita go.
And that was it.
Because that was, yeah. And then for the first time, I failed a sanity roll, actually. Because up until that point, you know, like I see Milton remove a man's leg, a man we were trying to rescue.
Oh, God, I feel that.
And he's like, oh, I'll just be taking that other leg. And that, you know, I had to do a sanity roll for that. And she got like an extreme success. And apparently it was just like, well, yep, that what's a little cannibalism between friends? Let's go.
Hang on.
Apparently we're leg thieves now.
I didn't eat the leg.
No, he didn't eat the leg. I just want to I want to defend Milton there.
No, but you were going to, right?
That was the
end game for the leg.
I was probably salivating.
Get a chance to. Yeah.
See, I think that these roles, these pivotal roles, rolling the dice and scoring either really well or really badly in these situations, I think that can put a little accent on how you understand your character. That has a kind of a lasting effect, even if in subsequent roles you don't roll the same. In those key moments, I think they do add a little bit more to the character as you understand it, as you play it.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Like Hector being eaten by the Labrador. You know, for that moment, he had suddenly developed as a character, and then it was all over.
And then it was all over.
Sorry, yeah. Jen, go on.
No, that's fine. No, because it's true, because that did actually really influence how I thought of Wally, because she just kept nothing, none of this stuff bothered her up until that final moment. None of it really, like, you know, she was attacked by things and you know, had to run screaming from things a few times, but she didn't really lose any sanity. It was just whatever. And that really sort of informed how I thought about, like, why would she be like this? Well, you know, and you think of, like, this, come up with some fun backstory, like, you know, because initially I just kind of envisioned her as this, like, you know, sort of flighty upper-class twit that was going to come in and get eaten by something, probably, you know.
And so far...
I suppose Andy has learnt his lesson with Hector, because now in the game that we're playing, we've kind of come to Wally's patch, and we've got all of, you know, the great and the good available to us. We've got all resources available to us. Mm-hmm. It, you know...
Well,
but also Wally's experiences in London do go a long way towards explaining why she has gone and sought out a band of utter lunatics.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to give away to any spoilers for the next campaign, but that's fine. Yes, I mean, clearly Wally is now on a mission. But I think to sort of slightly answer that point, Barney, when we got together back in, you know, 2020, for me it was like, oh, we're gonna play a one shot. I mean, seriously, for I didn't even think it would be four sessions. It was, you know, Watchers of Wolverswick is only like two pages in White Dwarf. I had no idea. Little did I know then how many sessions this group could spin out of a page of scenario. I wasn't thinking long term. I wasn't thinking anything like establishing anything or having a continuity or any way of continuing the story or these characters. But, you know, it was just so much fun for me. And, you know, I think it came out pretty well, and it seemed like you were all having fun. And
also I'd say that kind of fits the spirit of the original scenarios, because these old 80s scenarios, that's how we played them at the time. It was sort of, oh, yeah, let's throw a bunch of characters into this scenario that I just got. We'll take the survivors and see whether we can make them fit into something else. And that's how campaigns happened. And that's pretty much what we've done here.
It is. Which is interesting, because now we're doing an actual real campaign, which theoretically has more continuity, but don't think that's necessarily going to be the case. Overall, you know, as I said at the beginning, playing with certain characters for such a long time, you know, what does it feel like when a character you've played, and I'll talk, maybe Scott and Spencer can talk more to this. What does it actually feel like when you've played a character for over 2 years and then they're snuffed out? Is it a good thing?
Well,
bad thing?
Personally, I did feel very attached to Milton, but I was also aware that he'd gone on a journey that I wasn't sure how much further I was prepared to go with that character, and he did meet a fitting end, so it kind of tied up quite nicely. It was sad to see him go, but I don't feel there was anything else that I could have really done with him.
I think that's a good way to frame it. What about you, Scott? You seem quite happy to kill off your characters.
Oh yeah. I tend to play characters to destruction, and I think that was very much the case with Emery. As I've said before, I was always surprised that he survived each scenario, and it was clear from the the way his San was taking a battering into his Cthulhu mythos, the score was going up. And I mean, we never really tracked what all the gin was doing to him, but it can't have been anything good. But he was always on a very short timer. And it just seemed appropriate that he'd go out with a bang at some stage. And I was very happy with the way things ended. It just seemed like an appropriate wrap-up for the character.
Yeah, I think it was good. I think the fact that it all came in a rush, like three quite long-term characters all dying in a matter of minutes, literally after years of playing, that's what felt a little bit like sudden and not shocking to me, but just like, oh God, what have I done? Was that what... Should I have done that? Are people going to like just throw down their headphones in disgust after hearing three beloved characters die so quickly? But we'll see, because obviously this, when we're recording this, the episode hasn't gone out. We're only on about episode 6, I think, of Bookhounds. But
I mean, surely there are other adventures that could have happened before or in between.
But then you've got to survive. You know, you can't really start putting prequels in. And
yeah, I know. I mean, but that's an interesting thought, Barney. But
and is reanimation really off the table?
I don't know if we want that to happen. It doesn't work out that too well usually in Lovecraft stories. Yeah. Not usually. But
I'll put Rita on the slab. You know.
Well, I mean, of the three of you, I feel like Emery, like, still is one
somewhere
discreet object. So he could possibly come back. But weren't Rita and Milton just straight up eat?
Yeah. Well,
but there's a spiritual plane. There's a spiritual plane.
There's a spirit. Oh, okay. So we're using D&D rules here.
Now we're starting to get into some of the philosophical complexities of Lovecraft and whether or not it is truly a nihilistic, empty, godless universe, or whether there is some sort of spiritual existence. And oh God, no, let's not.
Let's not. But I would say you do need the essential salts if you're going to do resurrection, and that is canon. So, you know.
Well, maybe you can sit them out of Bias's droppings.
Do mythos entities, do they poop?
Do they poop? If they do, it might not be in this dimension. That's the thing. That's the trouble.
Yeah.
So we're getting late now because we're recording a bit late, and Barney made it very clear that he didn't want to set up too late.
It's fine. It's fine. I'm sitting here. I'm here. It's fine.
Well, we'll wrap this up in a minute anyway, because you know who wants to listen to more than an hour of us rambling on about let me tell you about my character. That's essentially what we've done. We've done a let me tell you about my character episode. But I hope people, given that they do love these characters, will find it interesting. And that's what I really want to say, is that I don't know how much I kind of share with you guys, or I do share bits and pieces now and again about comments from listeners. But this storyline, the old farts and the characters therein, are much beloved. They really are. People always talk about them as being, you know, their favorites or just wonderful storylines, and of course that's of course largely down to you guys playing them. But I think we kind of captured something really wonderful for me, which is a bit of a nostalgic look back at the old days of Call of Cthulhu, which although I love the modern takes on it, the more, I don't know, sophisticated maybe might be one way of putting it, or more culturally, socially attuned to our current days.
Polished,
but there's something wonderful about those cranky old scenarios, and I think the characters all just fitted it perfectly, really, which I think makes it very likeable and fun to listen to. No one's nodding.
Oh, yes.
Amen.
In full agreement. Yeah,
you nodded. No one agrees.
I was nodding on the inside, Andy.
Nodding on the inside. But yeah, no. So I just wanted to thank you all, really, for bringing me so much joy and fun, as well as the listeners who, well, and they're just going to have to fall in love with a new bunch of characters, because very soon we will be debuting, well, I'm going to give a little spoiler away, we're going to be debuting Shadows of Yog-Sothoth, which, well, we're a little way into it already, aren't we, guys? Yeah. But I'm having a lot of fun with that, and the new characters are wonderful. I think they're very different, and of course we're playing Pulp as well. But, yeah, I hope we can create the same kind of warm feelings.
I suppose I'd like to say that everything, you know, everything I said before about my characters and being a bit restless is true, but I have absolutely loved all of them. So there was Hector, then there was Barry, which I took your catchphrase, "Fucking hell, Mister," which was wonderful. So that was a nice thing to do. Rita, I think was wonderful, because she was always slightly changing everything, and some of those bits in Ghost Jackal Kill were just great, great fun. And then I've got my new character, who is actually also very good fun.
I'm glad you're saying that. I hope you don't get restless with your new character, who we won't give any hints on. So I think that's probably where we can say goodbye to the listeners and say thank you also for listening.
Well, and also thank you to you for running all this, Andy, and getting it all started, what, 2.5 years or 3.5 years ago now. And yeah, blimey.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure, and long may it continue. I get a lot of joy out of these games. I think we all said after last session, we all needed that, didn't we? It's great that we can make a podcast out of it, but I'd do it even if you weren't. So good stuff. Yeah.
It's a nice habit. Mm. It's a nice habit that we formed.
It is a habit. Yeah. Yes, it is indeed. All right, well, we can leave it there. Thank you all for giving me an hour today, and we will rejoin Yog-Sothoth soon. Stand by, for I've got a feeling I'm falling for nobody else but you.
Nobody else but you, and you know it too. You caught my eye, baby, that's why. I've got a funny feeling that I'm falling. Show me the ring and oh boy, I'll take it from you. I used to travel single, oh we chance to mingle, oh now I'm a tingle over you. Oh Mr. Parson, stand by, don't leave me now. I've got a feeling I'm falling, and how? Falling for nobody else.